Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So the Finnish understanding has always been that to produce happiness and wealth in Finland has been tied into that alchemy of turning a geopolitical trap into being on top of the world.
Welcome to the National Security Podcast, brought to you by the ANU National Security College, with support from policyforum.net. In this episode, Director of the Finnish Institute of International Affairs, Dr. Mika Autala, joins Professor Rory Medcalf. Dr. Autala shines a light on the distinctly Finnish way of safeguarding a small democracy's national security in an unforgiving strategic environment. Before we get into it, we would like to acknowledge the Ngunnawal people, traditional owners of the land from which we broadcast. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
So welcome to the National Security Podcast. And our special guest on this occasion is Dr. Mika Autala, who's the director of the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. He is, in my view, the leading geopolitical analyst and commentator in Finland and is also a very significant voice in the wider European policy debate. And we'll have a wide-ranging conversation today, bringing a Finnish perspective to global strategic challenges. Now, the podcast listeners in Australia and elsewhere may be wondering why the National Security Podcast, based out of the National Security College in Australia, is taking an interest in a Finnish perspective. And there's a story behind that. It's a dangerous strategic environment out there, beset by great power rivalry, and authoritarian coercion. And whether you're looking from Europe or from the Indo-Pacific, you're also seeing, I think, the agency of smaller and middle powers in protecting and advancing their interests and values. One of the most quietly effective and fascinating smaller powers in this regard is Finland. So it makes sense, I think, for these countries to study one another's experience, to learn what makes them tick and what are the secrets of their success. Mika, thanks for joining us on the National Security Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I'm really hoping that you'll be our guide here today to explaining the Finnish geopolitical worldview, what it is and why it matters. So perhaps you could begin by explaining what is the Finnish geopolitical worldview.
Well, it has always been very much dictated by necessities of the very harsh and bleak great power environment. So we have 1,300 kilometers of common border with Russia. There's a saying in Finland that Russia is the lightning rod that connects Finland into global crises and conflicts. So wherever Russia is involved, somehow connects with Finland and has ramifications and consequences when it comes to our security environment. So Russia has always had that role in the minds of Finns, and our historical experience as a part of the Swedish Empire, and then after 1809 as an autonomous part of the Russian Empire, has always been a bleak sense of trying to come into terms with great power relations to stabilize them, if that's possible. If not, then to have some deterrence and ability and capabilities of actually fighting, as we did in the Winter War, and the historical experiences have wars with Russia once in a century. So that is something that is essential in understanding the Finnish security culture. Connected to that, the importance of unified nation and society, that has always been a clear starting point for Finland. You need to have the Republic of Finland unified in order to be able to cope with different vortexes of geopolitics.
So that begins to shine some light, I think, on the question for listeners on the other side of the globe. But although you mentioned bleakness quite a bit there, and the the very formidable and, as we're seeing at the moment in Ukraine, aggressive great power on your border, Finland's a democracy, and in fact we see. We see international polls every year that suggest it's one of the happiest or happier countries in the world. It's a resilient society. So how does surviving in this bleak strategic environment square with the democratic and inclusive nature of Finnish society?
I think one of the kind of the cornerstones of the democracy in Finland has always been the necessity of having unified nation. I have a theory that I have been pushing in Finland that has to do with kind of the strategic culture not so much being influenced by any Enlightenment era ideologies, but more so by the harshness of the environment. So in Finland, it's a very egalitarian country that has to do with the need to have a total defense tradition in Finland. So there's a role for everybody. And that stems from relatively brutal history that we have had in surviving in the Finnish peninsula. Then Finland is very corruption-free. According to studies, Finland is the least corrupted country in the world. And I think much of that tradition has to do with the corruptive operations that Russia and Soviet Union has imposed on Finland. So the corruption issue is a security issue in Finland. So it's very difficult to have these corruptive operations. And most of the Finnish major business and trade with Russia is channel through government-owned entities in Finland. So you don't have, like you have in many neighboring countries of Russia, you don't have oligarchs that would gain income from Russia trade. Actually, it is the government coffers that are filled with the oil money or with the gas money. So there is a kind of a very strict processes through which the Russia trade has always been handled. Of course, we have had periods where compromises have been made, and during the Cold War years, of course, the time of Finlandization was one of those that infringed on the internal domestic politics of Finland when Russia was or Soviet Union was a player inside the country, but many of the national characteristics that are associated with Finland stem from geopolitical roots, and of course also from the Nordic roots, kind of the importance of being connected to the Nordic main trunk of how to build societies. So the welfare model of Finland emanates from that importance of being connected to the West, and the West in Finland has meant mostly the Nordic cooperation. Only lately it has had wider European and then now a transatlantic component. So the word West has meant many things in Finland. But if you understand the kind of the Finnish geographical position you know, the border ranging from Kola Peninsula to the gates of St. Petersburg to the Gulf of Finland, very narrow Gulf, and to Åland Islands. You can start to see that it has been a bit of a geopolitical trap. But on the other hand, it has always been also geostrategic possibility, the locatedness. And I think Finnish foreign policy has always been based on the kind of a political alchemy of turning the trap into a success story. So being on top of the world has always been a safe position. So away from the geopolitical issues and challenges and trying to build industries and innovation economies that could actually make a difference when it comes to Finnish position. So the Finnish understanding has always been that to produce happiness and wealth in Finland has been tied into that alchemy of turning a geopolitical trap into being on top of the world. And Finland is of course very a society that has very high standards when it comes to national resilience, when it comes to innovation economy, and those have been seen as tools of surviving in the geopolitical environment. So there's a clear understanding that the long line of in the Finnish foreign policy is to be a world-class smaller power in at least on in particular areas and produce success stories in Finland when it comes to egalitarian society, when it comes to innovation economy, when it comes to corruption, being free from corruption. So the happiness aspect, I think, comes from that that need to do something to stay away from Russia and insulate or crown some of the shocks that emanate from Russia, either internal or then international turmoil.
There's so many dimensions to that that exposition of or that explanation of Finland's situation. I'd like to drive us in a moment to the question of NATO membership, because that's obviously a very historic moment in Finnish strategic policy this year. But before we get to that, I will, if you don't mind, Mika, just take us a little bit back into history, because, again, a lot of our listeners will not have a fine understanding of Finnish strategic or political or diplomatic history. This is a country, I think, population now of around 5.5 million, so a relatively small country in population terms, a large land area, but a country that has literally fought wars of national survival. And so it would be interesting just to reflect a little on what that military history, whether it's from Finnish independence through the Winter War and beyond, what that has done to underscore this Finnish worldview, because it is partly, as I understand it, about maintaining pretty significant military strength for a small democracy, isn't it?
Yes, it has always been that even after the end of the Cold War, there was always an understanding in Finland that bleaker times might return, and so we didn't drive down our defense expenditures as radically as some of the our neighbors, Western neighbors. So the peace dividend wasn't that important as the strategic culture of needing a defense. The Finns knew that although there were hopes for Russian democratic development, that there were hopes for Russia normalizing, i.e. that it would surrender any claims when it comes to its neighbors. There was also a much grimmer assessment of the situation that geography doesn't change and Russia might come back as a threat to Finland. So when Putin started to build up the Russian armed forces, we didn't see that as a process of modernization. We saw that as a process of rearmament increasingly. And that also meant that Finland needed to gear up its own defenses. So that has always been the tradition. As I said, Finland was part of the Swedish Empire for 750 years, and of course the military culture, or the law of the land, as they say, comes from the Swedish Empire. And mostly the Swedish times are not seen as in any form of colonizing Finland. It is seen as a civilizing time, and they are looked upon those years as good years. But Finnish armed forces has a tradition of having to fight wars, not only in Finland, but also in the neighboring areas, wars between Sweden and Russia, when Sweden was an empire, and then during the independence years, wars against Soviet Union, the Winter War being perhaps the kind of the most grim example of that being largely left alone, although there were sympathies and empathies from the Western powers, and Churchill was giving those famous speeches about the Northern race if the Northern race, i.e. Finland, fails, then the light of civilization ends. So there was support, but that support didn't translate into...
But Finland was fighting alone at that time against the full might of the Soviet Union, right?
Yes, that is true. And then later on, there was the choice of when the continuation war started after the Winter War, in order to gain back some of the lost territories, then we were getting help from Germany, and that was of course not the best choice possible, but that was the only choice. So there's a saying in Finland that the choice was between plague and cholera, and then the Second World War ended as it did, but Helsinki remained unoccupied, and that is seen as a story of kind of a defensive victory at the end. Although the history is complex, there was no sense of guilt left to the Finnish strategic culture, unlike in Germany, where guilt over the Second World War is immense, and it still impacts German-Russian relations very much. But for smaller powers, necessities are the key drivers, and there's no moral, ethical lessons to be learned when it comes to survival of the nation. That choice between the plague and cholera, of course, was important background for the Finlandization years that ended when the Cold War came to an end. But when it comes to the NATO membership, the choice was so obvious, and at the end it was very easy when Russia had crossed the line of clearly showing that our neighbor Russia starts a large-scale war in the neighborhood that was crossing the line. So we have always been very much on the look when it comes to Russian legitimate interest versus illegitimate interests, and crossing the borders of Ukraine was crossing a line that signaled to the Finnish nation that something needs to be done, and then things were done.
We'll be right back.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Around the world, democracies are in crisis. Leaders have become followers. Populists offer glib solutions to complex problems, and people search for answers. Block out the noise. Each week on Democracy Sausage, we go deeper to bring you insights from leading scholars, journalists and commentators to help you make sense of the world. I'm Mark Kenny from the Australian National University. Join me at the Democracy Sausage Hot Plate every Monday and Thursday.
So how did the national mood and the national mindset change this year? Because I think many of us watching Finnish foreign policy over many years assumed that NATO membership would always be debated, it would always be talked about in Finnish democracy, but it would never actually happen. What changed and how did the public mood and the political process change?
Rory, that's a good question. And I think, you know, the endless debate on NATO in Finland was a little bit stuffy. It didn't go beyond the surface level. So what it was all about was kind of identity-based debates on whether or not a person is a pacifist or militaristic person, or whether or not the person has a positive outlook for Russian future or negative one. So it was a little bit drifting, the whole debate. It didn't go to the key question of what NATO actually is and what it does and what are the mechanisms of joining it. We didn't actually at the end even know how Finland should join, what is the process of doing it. So that demonstrates that largely it was a little bit a debate on happening at the surface level, artificial debate. But yes, we did have a debate. And we had the so-called NATO option. The kind of the prevailing Finnish foreign policy doctrine was that if a crisis happens, then alliances are formed naturally. Kind of a Clausewitzian idea when tough situations happen, your friends are going to show up because they have their own national interests, and if somebody's national interest is coinciding with the Finnish national interest, then there's going to be alliances. So it was a little bit of a doctrine of alliance formation during the crisis times. So Finland wasn't ready to join during the peaceful years, but it was clearly willing to join during the crisis times. Another perhaps explanation was that why we were taking so many years to join had to do with the prevailing security order in Europe. So Finland, being the host of the Helsinki summit 1975, had a little bit of an ownership over a certain order in Europe.
Over a détente, essentially, over the end of the Cold War.
Yes. But that was kind of a tradition that multilateralism, multilateral institutions, OSCE is a key interest of Finland as well. So there were key facets of that. One was that even smaller countries are free to make their own security solutions, that they can have defense alliances if they choose. So that was one of the kind of the spirits of Helsinki. So the open door policy of NATO was very clear, very carefully watched over the years in Finland. It was important for Finland that NATO has a door that is open, and the so-called NATO option was connected to that. And when Russia made a claim last December, the security claims that also included Finland, it was basically dictating that the door should be closed. Hmm. And that, of course, led into logical conclusion that if the door is closing, then we should perhaps try to get in.
So in a way, Russia actually accelerated this process.
Yes, so Russia should look in the mirror when it comes to Finland joining NATO, because by making those claims, they actually contradicted kind of a sacred element of Finnish foreign policy, which has to do with the Helsinki Accords and with the Helsinki spirit. So contradicting those, making claims for spheres of interest, clearly again cross the limit between the legitimate and illegitimate security interest, as Finland sees those in relation with Russia that has a long history. So in the Finnish minds, when the war started, people started to ponder what is happening. And when we saw that the Ukrainians are actually, or the Russian force was already meeting a counter force in the willingness of Ukrainians to fight, that rang so many bells in our historical memory that population, the citizens of the nation started to change their opinion on NATO. It became clear that Russia is an aggressor, but not only that it is a weaker aggressor as we were predicting it to be. Smaller countries can make a difference, and that led into some of the hesitations by some political camps in Finland being overcome. So clearly there was a kind of a wave or seismic shift in the NATO debate, in the NATO support from a low 20% NATO support. It increased in a few weeks to close to 80% NATO support, where it remains.
So last year it was what, below 50%, and it's gone to over 80%, and that's where it is.
It was around 25% the NATO support. What was a clear trend in Finnish opinion polls was that the undecided, the number of people who were undecided, that was growing, and it was about a third of the population, and those who were strongly against NATO membership, those declined to less than 50% even before the war. So there was kind of question marks after Georgian War 2008 and the first Ukrainian War 2014 that left quite a lot of Finns thinking that what Putin is doing to Russia and what Russia is capable of. And then February 2022 clearly demonstrated that Russia can be a military threat to its neighbors, and the hesitations were just, there was no hesitations, meaningful hesitations when you look to the parliamentary vote in Finland. So it was a kind of a bottom-up process. So it started from population changing its opinion, and then the political leadership kind of executing the will of the people. So in a way, very democratic process at the end.
And looking at this from the outside, it looks as if the politics of this have been handled very well internally within Finland. And what's extraordinary is that you've got a coalition government of many parties. So in theory, there could have been all kinds of obstacles to progress.
Yes, there could have been kind of a political hesitations. As you know, the kind of the tail of Finlandization has been a factor in Finnish politics for years, kind of the wishful thinking combined with economic opportunities offered by Russia. So kind of a
And just to clarify for listeners who don't know the history, the definition of Finlandization in your view is what?
Well, it's basically two-faceted. Finlandization for Soviet Union was window dressing policy, kind of demonstrating to the Western European states that there can be a so-called cohabitation with Soviets. So it was window dressing, strategic tool a weapon, but in Finland it basically meant that the foreign policy was clearly restricted. So Finland tried to be a neutral country during the Cold War years, but Soviet Union never recognized Finnish neutrality. It was only Gorbachev towards the end of Soviet Union who recognized the neutrality of Finland. So they were always expressing Finnish neutrality in terms like Finland aspires to be a neutral country. So it was never recognized. So neutrality was the westernmost position Finland could take during the Cold War years after the end of the Second World War. When it comes to society, it meant that there was self-censorship in Finland. So you shouldn't talk in negative way about Russia. You should talk about cooperation, talk about friendship among nations. You shouldn't speculate on threats and war. And that type of language remained even after the end of the Soviet Union. There were hesitations in Finland to talk in negative way about Russia. There were informal norms that a little bit regulated also the use of words when it comes to Russia, seeing Russia as a threat, seeing Russia as a possible source of war. People were hesitant towards using language like that, even up to this decade. So the kind of the tale of Finlandization remained a bit. And that was, of course, facilitated by economic opportunities that Russia was offering. The trade, the oil and gas trade, so Finland took the position when it comes to the gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea, the Nord Stream 1 and 2, that they are environmental issues, and if there's no environmental concerns, then they can be built. So Finland took positions that were a little bit naive on the hindsight. But of course, there was a big debate on those issues in Finland. So the tale of Finlandization was very much criticized as well by the media and by various societal actors. But you are quite right that in a multi-party government, there could have been a much harder process and more difficulties in reaching a conclusion when it comes to NATO. But as I said, 24th of February lightened up so many synapses in the collective history, in the collective memory of Finns, that it was pretty difficult for any party to resist that pressure. And at the end, there was no party, no parliamentary party, who was against Finland joining NATO. The Left Alliance took a neutral position, saying that it is not a crucial question for them. They are not going to leave the government because of the issue. So at the end, there was an avalanche when it comes to joining NATO. But there were difficulties, of course, because many of the parliamentarians who voted for NATO came into parliament by expressing negative views about Finnish NATO membership. So the question of mandate was one of the topics that was important. So how can you change your opinion? But of course, in Finland, there's also a tradition that if times are difficult, then the government and the nation has to act as one single unit. And I think Russia crossed the threshold of triggering that consensus building in Finland, that everybody saw it as inevitable that Finland needs to do something, and they didn't want to be on the wrong side of history in the process.
So when the facts changed, minds changed. And that's, I think that's a really important message for other countries looking at their own strategic circumstances. Mika, you've been very generous with your time and your thoughts. I've just got two questions, if I may, before we conclude this conversation. One question I'll go to is actually about what kind of ally, what kind of NATO member do you think Finland is going to be? And then I want to, after that, to move on just to a question about the global strategic environment, including the China question, if I may. But firstly, what kind of ally do you think Finland will be within NATO?
Well, Finland, as I said, it has a tradition of being a very rule abiding country when it makes decisions. Those decisions are very much supported by the population. So I would expect Finland to be, or try to be, a model NATO member state, contributing to the commitments that it has made. So there is a very stoic, even Spartan spirit when it comes to defense in Finland. But of course, Finland has also unique contributions. Similar to Australia, Finland views itself as an island. So we have always had that saying that Finland is an island, and by that, what is basically meant is that Baltic Sea disconnects Finland from the continental Europe, and then the Russian border is a border that has geopolitical dimension to it. So we cannot trust that it would be when the times are difficult, that it could be something that offers us help. So Finland has viewed itself as an island, and the lifelines of Finland, the kind of the security of supply, has always been the key. So what happens in the Baltic Sea? So I would expect that Finland would contribute quite a lot to the resilience that is also in the NATO strategic plans nowadays. Resilience when it comes to society, but also when it comes to Baltic Sea, the connections there. Finland has a Nordic security identity, so there's quite a lot of talk about Nordic passion, kind of uniting the Nordics in one defense alliance. But of course, there has to be a better understanding in Finland when it comes to functioning of NATO. So we cannot only assume that the defense of the long border with Russia, by definition, is collective defense, or stick to kind of a reflex-like idea about the Nordic bastion. We have to also contribute to the defense of the Baltics, but we have to also be ready to understand the complexities of the Black Sea and how that is connected to Baltic Sea. We have to understand the complexities of Turkish security issues. But on the whole, as I said, Finland usually tries to be a model in different aspects. When we joined the European Union, the key slogan was that Finland is a model European Union member state. And something like that is to be expected from Finland.
And finally, on the global question, I mean, as you know, NATO recently in their Madrid summit and with their new strategic concept is, while being a Euro-Atlantic alliance, also looking at the global picture. The European Union has an Indo-Pacific strategy where we look at the world in Australia. From our vantage point, of course, China looms very large, and the challenge of the way that China is using its power is a really fundamental question for us. So it would be interesting to understand what are some of the perspectives or insights that Finland would bring to dealing with global strategic challenges, including the China-Russia relationship?
Well, the kind of the unlimited nature of China-Russia partnership, of course, brings China to the Finnish map in a new way. China is a faraway country, and there's a saying in Finland that all power is bad, but power that is further away is always better than power that is close by. But we are only disconnected from China by one country, and that is Russia. So China is, of course, seen as Russia used to be seen as an economic opportunity. But when you the internal discussions in Finland concerning, for example, 5G, when it comes to Chinese geo-economic power, Finns are taking very critical stances towards those. So kind of balancing the trade relationship with clear geopolitical issues. And now once Finland comes a member of NATO, of course, there has to be an understanding that China is an issue for our key allies like US, and therefore there needs to be more critical evaluation of the stances between Finland and China, and also European Union and China. So my expectation is that the Ukrainian war or the Russian aggression against Ukraine is not going to end in a peaceful situation or restoration of the European order. It's going to end in a conflict, and that conflict is more global in its nature. And China is a clear player there. So what is the Chinese contribution going to be when it comes to that conflict? Does it offer solutions to it, or does it actually make it much starker, more conflict-ridden situation? That's something that remains to be seen. But of course, the Chinese actions in the Indo-Pacific are not a good omen when it comes to what the future might look like. So by joining NATO, Finland becomes a part of a bigger defense alliance that has, of course, partners in the Pacific region.
Well, we'll leave it there. We've traveled a long way from Finland's history of self-defense against the Soviet Union in the 20th century through the grim logic of its decision this year to join NATO in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and through to a recognition of the global strategic dynamics, including the China challenge for Europe. And along the way, we've had some fascinating insights into the uniquely Finnish model of robust national security in a democratic framework. And what struck me was the power of radical transparency in a culture of anti-corruption in providing a kind of fortification for democratic institutions. That's an interesting observation for other countries, including Australia, as we debate our own integrity mechanisms for Parliament as part of the protection of our democratic institutions. My thanks again to our special guest, to Dr. Mika Altola, who's the director of the Finnish Institute of International Affairs, for joining us on the National Security Podcast and sharing a distinctly Finnish perspective on national security. Until next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.